Hello, everyone, and welcome. Welcome to me. Welcome to you, Justin. We are here for another week of Turning Towards Life. We have a wonderful source today that we've only just done, and we've had this wonderful request from our friend Gavin, who listens regularly, to try and take up where we left off, because to him it felt like we were in the middle of something. So we are rolling with Gavin's idea to take the same source and see if we can do something like jumping in where we left off and see if we're even capable of that, Justin. But we'll see. Whatever we say will be whatever we say. But we want to thank Gavin for having the creativity to just email and say, please can you do this? And so we're really excited to be able to respond to that. And this is a source actually from the season that we're doing. We're calling it the season of healthy power in Turning Towards Life Live, which is our little season of gatherings, monthly gatherings, where we get to be together in community and do the Turning Towards Life practice together. And so I want to remind us all that we have our third season coming up, which is on love, starting in September. And it would be absolute joy for you, anyone listening to Turning Towards Life, to come and be in community and actually do the practice with us. We'll have sources like this, but they'll be centered around love. And we will be in conversation with one another. You can come with a partner. You can come on your own. You can deepen a relationship that you're already in by being together in the practice, or you can come and we'll match you with someone. We've had a wonderful time doing that this season already. Healthy power has been an amazing topic, and I don't think we're ever going to stop having that topic be at the heart of everything, actually, Justin. It feels like it's everything. And this passage that we are doing today is on relational power, and it's a really beautiful chance to do what we often say, Justin, of like, oh, we could talk for hours on this, or we could do this source again and again. It's a chance to have a go at the again and againness, which is really wonderful. So thank you, Justin, for originally actually recommending this book to me, Process Relational Philosophy, one of my favorite books. It's really small, really readable. I'd recommend anybody have a go at reading it and feeling into the possibilities that Robert Mesley sets out for us. It's really beautiful. Actually, it's more than that. It's foundational, important, deep, human, and very rarely written about very well, in my experience. The more I've searched for it, the more I realize there's not much writing on it, which is kind of weird to me, but it's true. And we're going to get into it now together. And if you want to email us, just like Gavin has done, you can just write to hello@turningtowards.life. It goes to me and to Justin, and we would love to hear from you, whatever you have to say. We love getting emails and we love responding, so please feel free to reach out to us. Justin, morning to you, and thank you for being here today with us.
Yeah, thanks, Susie. Hello, everyone. Wouldn't it be wonderful to get hundreds of emails? That's what I'm thinking. One of the things I realize, I don't know, we know many, many people listen or watch and join us regularly and have done over a long period of time, and more people come our way because you, those of you who are with us, recommend this to one another or send one another particular episodes. But it's actually relatively rare. We don't hear from most people. So I've got a particular request, which is please email us. Please, when you stop finished listening to this particular one, either go to turningtowards.life and click on contact us and fill in the form that will get to us there, or just get out your email and email hello@turningtowards.life. And you could just tell us you're there, or you could tell us how you experience this, or you could make a request, or you could anything. It would be wonderful to hear from you. And I was going to say something else and it has completely slipped my mind, Lizzie. Oh, I know what it was. All the details of Turning Towards Life Live Season 3 are also on that website, and it starts in September. It is now towards the end of July 2026, and we begin around the middle of September 2026. So now is the time, if you want to join us, to sign up for it. And it has been very good. We've had, I think, Lizzie, we've had two seasons of very good, welcome, warm community feel, but we've also had some very deep, meaningful, touching, and moving conversations in this practice of speaking and listening to one another. And I know from speaking to people who were involved this time that it changes things, it opens things, these conversations address things which really matter in life in a deep and real way. And not many people have access to that kind of safety of conversation, you know, sort of like the holding and trustability of a conversation where you can really explore something that means something to you with someone else. So it's very exciting to begin season 3 in September, and it really is doing what we're doing here. So that's all on turningtowards.life. And you could go and do that. You could pause the podcast now and go and do that right away, or you could wait till the end and then do that. Either would be excellent. So our source this week, as you said, Lizzie, we've only just done this. So we took up this source 2 weeks ago only, and now we're back because of Gavin's request. And what we'll do is we'll read the source, and then we'll also say something about what Gavin asked of us, because it will be the leaping off point. And you can always find the source in the show notes and on the website. And as you said, Lizzie, this is from Process Relational Philosophy by C. Robert Mesley. It's not our power to remain unaffected or even the power to control others that makes our lives richer and more valuable. It's our amazing capacity to be affected by the incredible richness and complexity of the relational web in which we live. Relational power includes three components. One, the ability to be actively open and affected by the world around us. Two, the ability to create ourselves out of what we have taken in. And three, the ability to influence those around us by first having been affected by them. Everything actual exercises some power, either to affect or be affected, but there's a crucial life-shaping difference between the power to control others and the strength that enables us to be active and open to the world around us. There's an equally vital difference between the power to control others by shutting them out of our lives and the power to engage the lives of others in ways that enrich us all. The world of the individual who can be influenced by another without losing his or her identity or freedom is larger than the world of the individual who fears being influenced. The stature of the individual who can let another exist in his or her or his own creative freedom is larger than the size of the individual who insists that others must conform to their own purposes and understandings.
It is not our power to remain unaffected, or even the power to control others, that makes our lives richer and more valuable. It's our amazing capacity to be affected by the incredible richness and complexity of the relational web in which we live. Relational power includes three components: the ability to be actively open and affected by the world around us, the ability to create ourselves out of what we have taken in, and the ability to influence those around us by first having been affected by them. Everything actual exercises some power, either to affect or be affected. But there is a crucial life-shaping difference between the power to control others and the strength that enables us to be active and open to the world around us. There is an equally vital difference between the power to control others by shutting them out of our lives and the power to engage the lives of others in ways that enrich us all. The world of the individual who can be influenced by another without losing his or her identity or freedom is larger than the world of the individual who fears being influenced. The stature of the individual who can let another exist in her or his own creative freedom is larger than the size of the individual who insists that others must conform to their own purposes and understanding.
Thank you, Lizzie. I'm going to just read the one part of Gavin's email to us. Like you said, Gavin said to us he felt that the conversation was not finished, and asked us to continue. And he said this: the knowing, thank you, Gavin, for writing this, the knowing when your eyes meet eyes that recognize yours and hold you loose enough to move freely, but tight enough to never let you fall. So when I read Gavin's email, Lizzie, I also thought of someone who's been a teacher to us, who Wendy Palmer, who in one of her books talks about, which is something that I thought was radical when I first read it, and over the years have really appreciated her wisdom. She talks about what happens if you live with other people and you go out in the morning, having saying goodbye to whoever the others are with you. They may be your loved ones, or who knows, roommates or something. And then we come back later at the end of the day, expecting that the person, the people that we've left behind, are the same people. But of course, they're different, she reminds us. They're not the same ones that we left in the morning. And we're not the same either, because we're going to sneeze.
Bless you.
Thank you. Because, and now here we can pick up Robert Mesley. First of all kinds of things have happened during the day, inevitably. And second of all, because we humans are more like processes than we are like things. And that's the really important part of it, that we're more like river flows or whirlpools or something. And so we're so affected by what happens in us. We're affected by what happens around us, and we're affected by what happens inside us. And so we're always different. And I think that this is where I want to pick up with Gavin's question, that knowing when your eyes meet eyes that recognize yours and hold you loose enough to move freely but tight enough to never let you fall, this combination raises, I think, a really important and I think a very often difficult question for us humans, which is, can I, Lizzie, hold you enough that you know that my commitment, the commitment that I have to you, is something like at the depth of being to being or life to life? Like, here I am, a life living and flowing and unfolding and turning and changing. And you are a life who's doing the same, living and flowing and unfolding and changing. And only when we can meet one another at that depth, I think, can we do what Gavin is asking us. Because essentially Gavin's question, it seems to me, is how do you recognize one another and hold one another's life in your hands with the kind of commitment that says, here I am, I'll never let you fall, and at the same time says, and however you are, I'm still here. But which is complex. It's really complex, because it also means, however I am still here. I'm changing too. And I'm changing in response to what you're saying. And you're changing in response to what I'm saying and how I'm being. And I think a lot of our trouble starts from an understanding that to be in relationship with another human is to be a sort of fixed thing. Like, I love you, Lizzie. I like being with you, Lizzie. I'll be with you as long as you show up in a way that matches the image I have of you in my mind, or the expectations I have of you in my mind, which also probably means I have to show up in line with the expectations I have of me in my mind and you have of me in my mind. And we're sort of in like a tangled web here where it's very, very difficult to move. And as Gavin implies in his question to us, one of the problems with that tangled web is if my way of being with you requires you to be a particular way, the moment you step out of that way, it calls our relationship itself into question. We can fall out of relationship because suddenly you have a different opinion or a different feeling or a different way. I think Gavin's asking us, how do we meet one another more deeply than that? I know it's possible, because I can think of the relationships I have where that's true. But I also know it's difficult, because when, I'll talk about you and me, Lizzie, if you surprise me with something that is very different to the image I have of you in my mind, I already have to work with not treating my surprise, my disorientation, as somehow talking about something fundamental to our relating. I have to be able to hold that, to hold maybe surprise, fear, confusion, anger, disagreement, all kinds of, I have to be able to hold that at the same time as holding a kind of deeper commitment your way, which says, whatever this is that's appearing, I'm still here. The deepest part of me is still in relationship with the deepest part of you. And that can be frightening if we imagine that our relationships are built upon showing up for one another in the way that we expect. I sort of really feel like I'm trying to thread my way here through something that is very simple to imagine in principle, but it's quite difficult to talk about in practice because we have so many things going on inside us at the same time. And what that asks us to do is something also difficult, but also very necessary if we can find our way to it, which is exactly what Robert Meslow is talking about, is can we extend to ourselves and one another's the freedom, the creative freedom, to be just whoever we're called to be right now? And can we, even when we feel fear, anger, confusion, disorientation, even when we're filled with sudden thoughts and expectations and disappointments, can we find the something in us which goes, my goodness, Lizzie, you are an unfolding, extraordinary, creative flow and force in the world. Even in the midst of all my strong feeling, I'll find that of me that can welcome this. I think that's what we're being asked to do here, to not fall out of one another's orbit when that happens in some way.
My goodness, so much is arising as you're saying all of this, Justin, as I'm kind of tuning into Gavin's request and feeling into my relationships in the world and the systems I'm in and all of that. And one thing that's coming to me is the word purpose. So I know that when all those things happen to me, Justin, like you just said, where I get reactive, defensive, protective, all of my parts come forth in response to something in the field of relationship. One of the things I'm noticing that I do, which is that I stop and I try and think about, well, what's the purpose of the relationship? Like, what's it for? Why are we together? Like, what is the purpose of us being together? And how would the way that I'm going to respond to you align with that or not align with that? And in that, there's a kind of mechanism of self-listening and self-observation that happens that allows me to do my best to come back when the time is right, which may be like in the moment because I'm married to the person we're talking about, or I might have a little more time because we're only meeting next Wednesday or something. Can I find myself in relationship to the purpose of why we're together and let the purpose of why we're together inform the way that I use my power? Like, let purposefulness be part of the power that I hold rather than believing everything I think about you, for example. So this whole thing of holding someone as if they're fresh now is also, for me, an invitation to question my definitions, to question whether what I'm even thinking is true, whether what I'm feeling has a kind of validity to it, or whether it's entirely reactive or entirely me being in my state of unease or defense or protection or something. And I think that's a dance that I have to do on the inside so that I can come back in some kind of alignment to you in any moment of loading the dishwasher, as we always talk about, or any other bigger something. in any moment, I have some choices. I have some choices about timing. I have some choices about what I say, in what setting, in what context, all of those things. And I think that is a big part of this relational power conversation. It's clear that I'm a person that's really affected by lots of things all the time. I'm on the scale of being affected rather than unaffected. I think me being unaffected is virtually impossible these days. I don't know whether maybe in the past I could have done that. I don't know. But now I feel very affected by everything. I read everything I see, every conversation I have. And then it's my power and my work to do the kind of discerning work, I guess, of who do I want to be in this relationship and how do I want to respond? And who do I get to become in my own internal processing of allowing myself to have all of the reactions and the responses that I have, but then in the context of relationship, which parts do I bring forth? And that turns me into this conversation about safety as well, which Gavin was bringing to us through this beautiful song, actually, by Imelda May called Home. And the lyrics you read, Justin, were the knowing, when your eyes meet eyes that recognize yours and hold you, loose enough to move freely, but tight enough to never let you fall. That kind of safety, the underlying relational safety that allows us to say what there is to say, trusting that we're going to be doing our own internal work, we're going to be passing out what's my history, what's my traumas, what's, you know, all of that stuff is obviously here all the time. And the processing that's required to know the difference between what my reactivity is coming forth with and where it's coming from, and feel that I can bring that forth because you'll hold me in that. So there's a deepening, I think, that's required in this context of the relational power that we hold, which is that you do have the power to hold me in that inquiry as to where my defense might be coming from, or where does this, can I feel where this originates from, given that it's a very big response to something that's not so significant? Or that's the inner work that I feel like I do in some ways on my own, but in many ways in relationship. The relational safety, in order for me to do that processing, feels really, really important. So I guess it's leading me down this road of being in relationship in a kind of turning towards life kind of way, where when we can actually listen to one another and be quiet in the presence of someone's processing, in the presence of someone's finding their way through their own inner work and finding language for it, that we could hold one another in that way so that we could reach some deeper understanding of how come things are coming forth that are coming. And sometimes that just takes a lot of space and time. And to have the faith that we can be held and hold one another in the arc of that process is a power that we have as a human being. And I think it does make up the deep roots of healthy relational power, because I can be with you and hold that. There's a turn of phrase that Robert has here about having the strength. What does he say? He says, let's see it now, but he used the word strength in a really beautiful way, where it does take strength to be able to hold ourselves. I know it takes my strength to be able to hold myself in that inner inquiry that I'm talking about. Because of course, I just want to blurt everything out and just say what it is I want to say and be heard and, you know, all of those things. I can feel a younger self of me that feels entitled to the space, or feel entitled to my opinion, or feel entitled to whatever I want to say. So it does take strength to do the inner work of passing out, like, well, what is it to be said in line with the purpose of the relationship? And what actually can I hold and heal and deal with and take into my own processing maybe with a different kind of relationship. That's the other thing. It's like, we're not talking about one relationship here. We're talking about a web of relationship where I might receive something from another place that enables me to be here better with you. But for us to feel into the web that we have, create the web that we want, even of relational safety, that we can process our lives and turn up so that we can hold our power for the purpose that we're intending to hold the relationship and enact conversations that serve that purpose, which are much less than pernickety and pokey, but they're aligned with something bigger and therefore they make sense to us in that moment from the perspective of purposefulness.
I found the line you were looking for. I don't know if this is the line you're looking for, but where he talks about strength. Lizzie, there's a crucial life-shaping difference between the power to control others and the strength that enables us to be active and open to the world around
us. Yes,
that one. Yes, it seems to me that strength is important here, that we're called upon here to cultivate a certain kind of strength to stay. And I think the way you're talking about purpose is really illuminating, because it's clear that the way that we might hold one another in a marriage is very, very different to how to respond to the person who cold calls us trying to sell insurance. You know, I tend to put the phone, I tend to think when somebody cold calls me, gosh, there's someone on the other end whose livelihood is this, who has to do this. So I feel an enormous amount of care towards the person themselves, but I'm not staying in the conversation. I don't want to be cold, you know, sold insurance or window glazing or something. So I will end that conversation in a way that I won't in my marriage. There's an obvious distinction. And so your conversation about purpose seems really right, that when we, as intentional beings, if we ask ourselves, why, for what, for the sake of what am I in this relationship? And then what does that call on from me? So in a long marriage, I'm just away celebrating our 30th wedding anniversary. It's been a long marriage and which I'm very happy to be in. And it calls upon, over 30 years, we change. We're really different to the people we were 30 years ago. I'm different today to how I was yesterday. Can I be strong enough, have enough strength in me to stay in contact with the person I'm married to as she changes and I change? And I think that does require, it asks something of us. I mean, I think that's the thing here about purpose. Something is being asked of us. And you mentioned time, Lizzie, and I was thinking about one of the things I've become very aware of is the demand that we be able to do this skillfully in the moment. And I think I've made things more difficult for myself by holding an idea that I ought to be skillful in every moment in responding, and I'm not. Sometimes I get frozen, sometimes I get angry, sometimes I get confused, sometimes. And I don't always find my way back in the moment. But time is so helpful here, because if I take the wrong path, can I come back later to this person and say, gosh, you know, then, yesterday, I wasn't the way I wanted to be. I think it's a big thing to demand that we always are exactly the way that we imagine we might be. And that adds layers of shame and confusion. If I can come back and I can say, gosh, I'd like to try again listening to you. You know, I realized that I was afraid. And now time is a great blessing here. And so in a way, I want to dispel the sort of myth that we humans always sort of ought to be on top of everything in every moment. I just think we're much more complex than that. And I wanted to pick up on the word safety, because I realize that I have a different word these days for this than that, which is I want to talk about trustability of relationships. Because I worry that the word safety immediately invites the worry or the fear that relationships are inherently unsafe. If the first thing we have to talk about is safety, I think what we're saying about one another is, well, until we establish safety, you and me, Lizzie, it's unsafe to be in a relationship. Now, I know that there are unsafe relationships in the world. There are abusive relationships, and of course, all over. But I don't think being human with one another is inherently unsafe. I think that we can create an enormous degree of mutual trustability if we'll take on the questions that are here. And so these days, I much prefer to talk about trustability. What makes me trustable? What makes you trustable? What makes the relationship deep enough for the purpose that you're talking about? So it's different from the cold call, like they're worlds apart. A casual friendship has different bounds of the trustability that's required than a deep friendship. A deep friendship, different bounds to a long marriage. They have different bounds of trustability with parent-child relationships. And I realize that, I mean, it might just be me, Lizzie, but the moment the safety conversation comes up, part of me goes, maybe it's not safe to be human. Maybe it's not safe to be together. And somehow I think it's exactly the wrong way around. For me anyway, it's the wrong way around to come, which is because of the kind of beings we are, we have the capacity to be immensely trustable with one if we'll pay attention to it. And it is when we let that lapse that we can cause harms to one another. Of course we can cause harms to one another. So I noticed that. And where I get to at this point is a strong sense of seeing afresh from this conversation with you that if I attend to the purpose well and ask myself, who am I called to be? And at what depth do I need to be trustable to be with this person given the purpose? And then the deepest relationships, I need to be trustable such that however the other person shows up, I can be trusted not to run, or if I do run, to come back, be trusted to stay open, and if I'm not open, to repair from it. That's the kind of depth of trustability that's called for. And your way of talking about it frees me up to recognize, of course, that level of trustability is not called for everywhere all the time. That would be a huge burden. It changes with who I am with, and that's what being committed and making a commitment to a person is I commit to be trustable at the appropriate depth, to be open at the appropriate depth, and to know how to come back if I find myself unable, if I fall over, I'm going to get myself up again and come back to you and say, let's address this again.
Yeah, it's really beautiful, Justin, and I love your drawing attention to the safety word, because like happens, and everyone would have heard me, if you've ever listened to us before, say this a million times, I suddenly now don't know what the word safe really means. But as in, as soon as we draw attention to it, I actually don't know what trust means either in this moment. I mean, I do from all the things I've already known, but the whole practice that we have here is calling things into the center of us that we can understand them more. And so for me to reflect on this word safety and to know what it feels to feel safe, to hear what happens for you when that word is used, and to wonder about the distinction between safety and trust. I mean, they seem to be very Venn diagram worthy for me, like there's pieces of each in the other all over the place. And I suppose for those of us who really, really know what unsafe feels like psychologically and physically and all the things, and to know the difference between safe and unsafe is a very important thing, to be able to discern the difference between those things, to be able to discern the difference between a trustworthy person and an untrustworthy person for this point in time, and to hold ourselves in those boundaries as well. So I'm really feeling very curious about all of that. And as you say, there's so much inherent in it. And it's always worth holding it between us to understand more, to see each word as a kind of a gateway to understanding and articulation. And this is a really tricky topic to articulate, because relationship is always two ways. It's always both things at the same time, simultaneously. So it's really hard to kind of pass it out. And that's why I appreciate this writing so much, because it does that. It gives us a way in talking about it. And I found myself thinking, Justin, I wanted to invite Gavin to take this source between him and a person who he finds trustability with, and to see where it takes him. And just to make that invitation to all of us, that we can always take whatever these sources are and place them between us and someone and do the practice together, which is, of course, what Turning Towards Life Live is a chance to do, with some structures and some trustworthy guide rails around it to enable relationship in this particular way. But that this really is worthy of us doing that. I feel so strongly that we could, just as Gavin invited us to do, we could put this between us again and again and again and again and find more distinctions, find more words that we don't understand what they mean anymore, find more questions to ask, find more wonderings and more curiosity about all of this. Because it feels like a massive, deep well of possibility and really healthy questioning of the underlying everythingness to do with me in relationship to you, you in relationship to the world, me in relationship to systems, to family members, to colleagues, to strangers, to everything. So I'm feeling really made curious, and I want to keep looking at what safe and trust actually mean as words. The first thing I normally do, Justin, is just go and look them up in the dictionary again. Just say, I think I just need to learn the basic definition and then see where we get to. So I'm feeling super curious, and this whole realm is really welcome. And I want to thank Gavin for inviting us even deeper in. And I hope we've done some kind of justice to what his request was.
I have the very strongest feeling that Gavin might write back to us and say, well, there's another conversation to have here, because of course there is, and many more. And I hope that one of the things that we're doing, Lizzie, by having this conversation, this is certainly what's happening in me, is that we're opening questions rather than resolving everything. There's much in our conversation that I know things settle and I go, oh, I can see this in a new way that seems useful. And very often new questions open. So yes, we are always incomplete, and that is as it should be, because it's part of being human. Thank you, Lizzie, for engaging in this conversation with me. Thank you, all of you, for listening. Gavin, thank you for writing to us and prompting us in this way to enter into a conversation that we would not otherwise have had. And you who are around us are also welcome to write to us, and we'll gladly be in conversation with you. And we promise to let ourselves be changed by what you say, which is what we've been intending to do here, because the purpose of our relationship with one another and with everyone is exactly that. That's the purpose here. So thank you, everyone. Thank you, Lizzie. We're going to call this to a close for this week. Please remember to go and have a look at Turning Towards Life Live on our website. And please remember to email us, which you could do right away before you go and do something else. That might be one way that we would hear from people if we make that request to you. And we'll see you next week.
Thanks, everyone.